artist Gregory Porter inspires the true meaning of Christmas, performing Yuletide classics and more. Further information and tickets available at thesoraya.org and at kpfk.org.
Frosted window panes, candles gleaming, and painted candy canes on the tree. Santa's on his way, and he's filled his sleigh with things and things and things.
Hi, this is Christian McBride, and you're tuned to 90.7 FM KPFK, radio powered by the people. 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 Santa Barbara, and worldwide on the web at www.kpfk.org. Peace!
Good evening. It's Thursday, December 4th. I'm Max Pringle. Coming up, the Supreme Court clears the way for Texans to vote next year based on newly redrawn congressional maps favoring Republicans. The FBI announces it's made an arrest on a suspect wanted in the placing of bombs at the headquarters of the Republican and Democratic National Committees the night before the January 6, 2021 U.S. Capitol insurrection. A Navy admiral tells lawmakers on Capitol Hill that Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth did not give a kill-them-all order in the second strike on a suspected drug-smuggling boat in the Caribbean in September. Senate Democrats introduce a bill to extend ACA tax credits beyond the deadline of the end of the month. The legislation, however, faces an uphill fight in the GOP-controlled Senate. And more than 1,000 Richmond teachers go on strike today for better pay, benefits, and working conditions. West Contra Costa's districts will remain open for the duration. These stories and more coming up from the studios of KPFA in Berkeley. This is the Pacifica Evening News. I'm Max Pringle. A divided Supreme Court today ruled in favor of allowing next year's elections in Texas to be held under the state's congressional redistricting plan favorable to the Republicans. President Trump pushed the redistricting plan despite a lower court ruling that the map likely discriminates on the basis of race. With conservative justices in the majority, the court acted on an emergency request from Texas for quick action because qualifying in the new districts already has begun, with primary elections set for March. The Supreme Court's order puts the 2-to-1 ruling blocking the map on hold, at least until after the High Court issues a final decision in the case. Justice Samuel Alito had previously temporarily blocked the order while the full court considered the Texas appeal. The justices cast doubt on the lower court finding that race played a role in the new map, saying in an unsigned statement that Texas lawmakers had avowedly partisan goals. Justice Elena Kagan wrote the dissenting opinion. She wrote that the court's intervention, quote, ensures that many Texas citizens, for no good reason, will be placed in electoral districts because of their race. And that result, as this court has pronounced year in and year out, is a violation of the Constitution, unquote. Meanwhile, Florida's Republican-controlled House officially kicked off the first meeting of its Select Committee on Congressional Redistricting today. This comes as the state becomes the latest to consider redrawing electoral maps amid a partisan battle for every edge in next year's midterm elections. But the prospect of mid-decade redistricting remains uncertain, with the top Republican on the committee stopping short of committing to draft new maps and appearing to draw a deeper divide among his party's leaders on how the process should move forward. Republican State Representative Mike Redondo, who chairs the committee, cemented his chamber's commitment to consider redistricting during Florida's regular session, which runs from January 13th to March 13th. He said it would be irresponsible to wait until next spring, as the GOP-controlled state Senate and Republican Governor Ron DeSantis have called for. President Trump instigated the national wave of redistricting efforts. He hopes to buck the historical trend of the president's party losing seats in the midterms, and his allies are wagering that Florida could yield 3 to 5 more seats for the GOP. Each seat is crucial because Democrats need a net gain of just 3 to control the chamber. At today's meeting, Redondo declared that any map drawing in Florida would not be done for partisan gain. That pledge drew loud laughs from the crowd, largely made up of progressive protesters and voting rights advocates. The FBI has arrested and charged a man with placing 2 pipe bombs outside the headquarters of the Republican and Democratic Party headquarters in Washington the night before the January 6, 2021 U.S. Capitol attack. Ed Donahue has more.
They were found the day before the Capitol riot. Attorney General Pam Bondi says the man arrested is Brian Cole Jr. from Woodbridge, Virginia.
Let me be clear. There was no new tip. There was no new witness, just good, diligent police work and prosecutorial work.
No details were given about a motive or whether the placement of the bombs, which never detonated, had any connection to the riot. This is FBI Director Kash Patel.
So we will divulge information when it is prudent and constitutionally permissible while upholding the safeguards of this case to make sure that the people that this individual intended to victimize get the accountability they deserve.
In the absence of harder evidence, Republican lawmakers and right-wing media outlets promoted conspiracy theories about the pipe bombs. Ed Donahue, Washington.
A grand jury in Virginia today rejected a bid to reindict New York State Attorney General Letitia James on mortgage fraud charges. A judge dismissed the previous fraud prosecution brought under pressure from President Trump. The previous judge also rejected an attempt to indict another Trump foe, former FBI Director James Comey, for allegedly lying to Congress. James was initially charged in October by the U.S. attorney installed by the Trump administration to replace the prosecutor who resigned under pressure to bring criminal cases against Comey and James. James denied any wrongdoing and accused the administration of using the justice system to seek revenge against President Trump's political opponents. The allegations related to James's purchase of a house in Norfolk, Virginia, where she has family. During the sale, she signed a standard document called a second home rider, in which she agreed to keep the property primarily for her own use for at least a year, unless the lender agreed otherwise. Prosecutors allege that rather than using the home as a second residence, James rented it out to a family of 3, allowing her to obtain favorable loan terms not available for investment properties, according to prosecutors. James' lawyers separately argued the case was brought to punish the Trump critic, who spent years investigating and suing the Republican president and who won a staggering judgment in a lawsuit alleging he defrauded banks by overstating the value of his real estate holdings on financial statements. The fine was later tossed out by a higher court, but both sides are appealing that ruling. The Pentagon Inspector General has released a report saying Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth put U.S. forces at risk by sharing sensitive information about an upcoming military strike on Houthi rebels in Yemen through an app on his private phone. Mitch McCann has more.
The report, which has not been released publicly yet, has been widely reported by U.S. media, including NPR, which says a summary of the report it viewed states that if a foreign adversary had intercepted the intelligence from the signal discussion, it would have endangered U.S. service members and the mission itself. The discussion centered on U.S. airstrikes targeting Houthis in Yemen, and the investigation found that Pete Hegseth sent information about the strikes to 2 groups, one of which included his wife and brother. The report acknowledged that Hegseth had the authority to declassify the information, but did not determine whether that had happened by the time it was shared. Mitch McCann, New York.
A Navy admiral has told lawmakers that there was no kill-them-all order from Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth in the boat attack in the Caribbean in September. The video of survivors being killed has alarmed lawmakers, and Congress is currently scrutinizing the attack on an alleged drug boat in international waters near Venezuela. More from Ed Donahue.
Navy Admiral Frank Mitch Bradley told lawmakers there was no kill-them-all order from Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth as Congress scrutinizes an attack that killed two survivors of an initial strike on an alleged drug boat near Venezuela. Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton was asked if there was the kill order.
No, both. Admiral Bradley was very clear that he was given no such order, not to give no quarter or to kill them all. He was given an order that, of course, was written down in great detail, as our military always does.
Cotton defended the attack. Delaware Democrat Chris Coons says he came away with a different conclusion than Cotton.
In a second strike, they were killed, and in a third and fourth strike, the boat was sunk. But I'm not going to get into a lot more of the details around that, because I don't think that's appropriate given this was in a classified setting.
There are mounting questions over whether the strike may have violated the law. Ed Donahue, Washington.
Senate Democrats today announced another bill to extend Affordable Care Act tax credits, which are set to expire on December 31st. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer introduced the legislation today at a press conference.
27 days. That's all the time Americans have before ACA premiums expire and health care costs explode in every state, city, and locality of the country. The Senate Republicans can avoid this now. The Senate can vote to pass our legislation.
Schumer's calling for a clean 3-year extension of the tax credits, which he said every Senate Democrat would support. In 2021, the American Rescue Plan Act updated the Affordable Care Act. It expanded the requirements for eligibility for tax credits to ensure no household had to pay more than 8.5% of its income for a basic health care plan. That move significantly lowered monthly health insurance premiums for millions of Americans. However, with the passage of President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act earlier this year, the expanded tax credits are set to expire. That means only households making under 400% of the federal poverty line, or about $128,600 per year for a family of four, will qualify for tax credit assistance. A report from the nonpartisan Center on Budget and Policy Priorities in late October projected that the amount the average enrollee pays will more than double. For example, it said a family of four making $130,000 per year would see their monthly premiums jump from the $900 average to nearly $2,000 monthly. That's an increase of almost $13,000 per year. In 2024, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office predicted that this rate shock would push millions out of the insurance market. The CBO estimates that the number of uninsured people would rise by nearly 4 million people on average each year from 2026 to 2034. That estimate is on the conservative side compared to some other studies. A KFF survey of more than 1,300 people in early November found that federal tax credits help more than 90% of ACA enrollees pay for their health insurance premiums. The survey also found enrollees more likely to blame Trump and the Republicans than they are the Democrats if the tax credits are allowed to expire. Still, Senator Schumer's plan is unlikely to pass with Republicans in charge of the Senate. Senate Majority Leader John Thune told reporters on Wednesday that the proposal of a clean, unaltered extension of the tax credit, quote, suggests Democrats are not really interested in fixing it. The proposal needs 60 votes to pass. That means that at least 13 Republicans would need to support it. In the House, a bipartisan group of lawmakers, led by Democrat Josh Gottheimer of New Jersey and Republican Jennifer Kiggins of Virginia, announced similar legislation. That bill proposes extending the tax credits by 1 year, with certain funding modifications agreed by both sides. Gottheimer says both Republicans and Democrats understand the need to move quickly.
This bipartisan group came together, has been working for weeks, and I know Jen and I are very grateful for everybody's incredible leadership and all the time they've put in. We finally produced something called Common Ground 2025. It's backed by 35 House Democrats and Republicans and will actually help make health care more affordable for American families. For us, this is all about working together to find common ground for the American people and to make life more affordable for them. The framework includes an extension of health insurance premium savings for American families with targeted modifications to help ensure families can still get the help they need. It's paid for and takes steps to ensure we root out fraud. We're calling for a vote by December 18th in both chambers of Congress to get something done before premiums rise in January.
Meanwhile, two California House Democrats, Sam Liccardo of San Jose and Kevin Kiley of Rockland County, proposed their own tax credit extension in that chamber. They also co-signed Gottheimer's and Kiggins' bill. Congressman Kiley said the House owed it to the American people to get something over the line before the deadline.
Doing nothing is not an option. There is a broad enough circle of consensus that we should be able to get this done by the end of the year. And let's be honest, this has not exactly been the finest hour for the U.S. House of Representatives. Over the last several months, the House has been missing in action in a lot of ways. This is an opportunity to change that. This is an opportunity for the House to lead, for the House to reassert itself, to once again become the people's House by actually serving the American people.
Any proposed extension that the House approves would then go to the Senate. Food share funds may have been restored in Wisconsin, but local organizations are speaking out about how program disruptions caused by the historic government shutdown are still preventing some residents from being able to access healthy food. More from Judith Ruiz Branch.
Grow It Forward in Manitowoc County operates multiple food access programs. CEO Amber Dogg says while the state supplemental nutrition assistance program has resumed, the government shutdown delayed the approval of their application to accept food share at their winter's farmers market until at least February or March. She says some regional farmers looking to accept food share at their farm stands are experiencing similar delays.
So this prevents small rural farmers, but also grocers from being able to have the necessary funding and resources to keep their shelves stocked and their purveyors paid and their staff employed.
Dog says for every food share dollar that is spent, it provides nearly double that in economic impact. Last year, Manitowoc County ranked third in Wisconsin for the percentage of farmers market sales made using food share. About 700,000 Wisconsinites receive food share benefits, and many are children or seniors. Dog says the average per person food share benefit in Manitowoc County is a little less than $5 per day. She says her organization operates a double box program at their farmers markets to stretch these benefits.
In Manitowoc County, there's about $1 million right now a month being distributed in benefits. Our food pantry unfortunately did not receive a $1 million increase in our budget to be able to handle the influx of need coming to our doorstep.
Dog says despite these challenges, the community has been incredibly generous in helping them to address local food insecurity. She points to local donations for purchasing fresh local foods from affected farmers to distribute through their pantry. But she stresses that food share provides dignity and choice that pantries alone cannot offer.
Speaking from my own experience, I formerly was a SNAP recipient. It was a temporary situation that I needed, and I'm grateful that I had access to those benefits because I certainly wouldn't have been where I'm at today if not for that hand up.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch.
The Trump administration is making good on a promise to send more water to California farmers in the state's crop-rich Central Valley. The U.S. Bureau of Reclamation today announced a new plan for operating the Central Valley Project. It's a vast system of pumps, dams, and canals that direct water southward from the state's wetter north. It follows an executive order President Trump signed in January calling for more water to flow to farmers, arguing that the state was wasting the precious resource in the name of protecting endangered fish species. Secretary of the Interior Doug Burgum said the plan will help the federal government strengthen California's water resilience. It's set to take effect Friday, but California officials and environmental groups blasted the move. They say sending significantly more water to farmlands could threaten water delivery to the rest of the state and would harm salmon and other fish. Most of the state's water is in the north, but most of its people are in the south. The federally managed Central Valley Project works in tandem with the state-managed State Water Project, which sends water to cities that supply 27 million Californians. The systems transport water through the Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta, an estuary that provides critical habitat to fish and wildlife, including salmon and the endangered Delta smelt. A new effort is underway to bring an end to the death penalty. A coalition of groups from around the country has formed the U.S. Campaign to End the Death Penalty. More from Eric Tegadoff.
The alliance hopes to build on the decades-long momentum to abolish capital punishment. The coalition includes groups from across the political spectrum, as well as faith groups, civil rights organizations, and people exonerated from death row. Director of the campaign, Laura Porter, says public support for the death penalty has decreased steadily in the past three decades, and less than half of people ages 18 to 54 support it. She also notes that new death sentences remain at historic lows.
In a country of 348 million people, there will be less than 30 new death sentences in 2025. There's no greater indicator of how Americans feel about the death penalty than in the jury room, and juries are sending very few people to death row.
This year has seen an uptick in the number of death sentences carried out. This is largely due to Florida, which accounts for more than a third of executions this year. North Carolina has not carried out an execution since 2006. However, lawmakers in the General Assembly have attempted to restart the death penalty with IRENA's law, which went into effect this month. The sweeping legislation was passed in response to the highly politicized killing of a Ukrainian immigrant in Charlotte earlier this year. Porter believes the law will likely be challenged in the courts. She says political rhetoric makes conversations about capital punishment difficult, but conversations about how executions fail to serve victims and guarantee a fair criminal justice system are more effective.
We usually do get people from both political parties to come together and get ready to get rid of it, but it does take time. And these moments in response to crime and when there is politicization of the crime is a tough one.
The lack of drugs needed for lethal injections is one hurdle for supporters of capital punishment in North Carolina. Sister Helen Prejean is an activist and author of Dead Man Walking, who was part of the U.S. campaign to end the death penalty. She says supposedly humane methods of execution like lethal injection are illusions.
We have been trying and trying to show that we can do the killing of a conscious, imaginative human being in a humane way, and it is impossible.
For North Carolina News Service, I'm Eric Tegadoff.
Minnesota Democratic Governor Tim Walz has denounced President Trump for his comments about Minnesota's Somali community. Trump has called the community garbage and labeled the state a hellhole. Walz said today these remarks slandered all Minnesotans and were unprecedented for a U.S. president. Republican legislative leaders stopped short of condemning President Trump. Instead, they criticized Walz for not preventing fraud in social service programs. Trump's comments followed a conservative news outlet's misleading claims about fraud involving Somali Americans. Federal authorities have prepared an immigration enforcement operation in Minnesota targeting a small fraction of Somalis living in the U.S. unlawfully. Most foreign-born Somalis in the state have become naturalized U.S. citizens. Human rights experts warned against possible threats ahead of next year's FIFA World Cup this week. The FIFA World Cup will be held next summer in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. The experts highlighted the need to protect immigrant communities, foreign visitors, and the journalists who will be covering the month-long tournament. Matches will be played throughout June at 16 venues across North America. The U.S. will host 78 matches. Mexico and Canada will each host 13 games. With the Trump administration ramping up immigration raids, human rights observers say they fear workers, journalists covering the games, and even fans could get swept up. Daniel Noronha is America's advocacy director at Amnesty International USA. He urged U.S. officials and FIFA, football's international governing body, to make sure the World Cup is safe for everyone.
FIFA and the United States authorities must ensure that the World Cup does not become a pretext for stifling dissent or expanding mass surveillance. Every player, fan, journalist, and resident has the right to participate and protest without fear of sanction, arbitrary detention, or any sort of discriminatory treatment.
Amnesty International, the NAACP, Reporters Without Borders, the ACLU, and other groups sent a letter to FIFA President Gianni Infantino about their concerns. FIFA has not responded. This isn't the first time FIFA has come under fire over concerns about rights abuses in World Cup host countries. Migrant workers labored in terrible conditions in the scorching heat to build stadiums leading up to the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Hundreds reportedly died. Before that, concerns about human rights abuses in Russia were expressed leading up to the 2018 World Cup in that country. The ongoing immigration crackdown is wreaking havoc in many communities, but it's also leading to growing activism in many areas as people speak out against the policy. Some Democratic lawmakers are joining the struggle with legislation to rein in the raids. More from Christopher Martinez.
The Trump administration's immigration policies and crackdown in cities has sparked fear and chaos in many communities and also pushback at several levels. On Wednesday, the Trump administration launched its immigration crackdown in New Orleans, and on Thursday, some local residents responded.
No ICE, no truth! The people united will never be defeated!
Several dozen protesters were forcibly removed from a city council meeting after they disrupted the agenda, urging city leaders to create ICE-free zones. The British Guardian posted video online.
You have to leave.
Several hundred agents from Customs and Border Protection and Immigration and Customs Enforcement are taking part in the two-month operation. They're aiming to arrest 5,000 immigrants in New Orleans and across Louisiana, saying they're targeting immigrants with violent criminal pasts. But that many arrests would be more than the number tallied during a two-month blitz this fall around Chicago, a region with a much larger immigrant population. The president of the New Orleans City Council says he cannot see any way a sweep of New Orleans would result in the arrests of 5,000 criminals. And such immigration enforcement actions are not just happening in big cities like New Orleans and Chicago. A quiet town in Arkansas, best known as the home to Walmart, has become another hot spot. Arrests in Benton County, Arkansas, have split families and spread fear. Several Democratic lawmakers are responding to the Trump administration's actions with legislation. Democratic Congressmember Pramila Jayapal of Washington is pushing legislation to rein in enforcement practices.
We are here today to say enough. Our Dignity for Detained Immigrants Act has a remarkable, unprecedented 123 original co-sponsors. Before we've even introduced it, 123 co-sponsors, and it overhauls the detention system. It drastically scales back the use of detention. It ensures that every single immigrant who is in detention has their human and civil rights protected.
The Dignity for Detained Immigrants Act would phase out the use of private, for-profit detention centers, prohibit the detention of children, and require Homeland Security to allow unannounced inspections of detention centers by lawmakers. Jayapal was joined at her news conference by Mahmoud Khalil, who was the first campus activist swept propped up by the Trump administration's crackdown on Palestinian activists.
There's nothing called civil detention. Detention is detention. That's the point of detention. And detention under this administration has become as a tool for punishment, as a tool for terrorizing communities, to instill fear into U.S. societies, because ICE is acting as Trump militia.
Over in the Senate, Democrat Dick Durbin of Illinois has reintroduced the Dreamers Act to protect undocumented migrants who are brought to the U.S. as children. He spoke at a news conference on the measure.
This moment in the history of our nation is a terrible, challenging moment for so many people, not just the Dreamers, but immigrants in general. I've been both angry and heartbroken to watch masked federal agents parading in their combat uniforms with automatic weapons in the city of Chicago. I've seen them wreak havoc in these communities and sow fear among people who are afraid to even go outside to go to church or to go shopping. And it's time that we bring an end to this madness that's happening in the streets of the cities of America.
Durbin says the fight has just begun. There's no telling when it will end. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
You are listening to the Pacifica Evening News on KPFK, KPFA and KPFK in Los Angeles. This newscast airs each night at 6 p.m. Back with more news after this.
KPFK is holding its year-end fund drive from December 2nd through the 19th. Aiming for 500 new monthly sustaining members by December 31st. This critical goal provides the reliable income needed for more core operations, engineering, the tower, staff, and equipment, allowing the station to stop patching holes and start rebuilding KPFK with more local reporting, original shows, and digital tools. A monthly gift provides essential stability. Please become a sustainer today at $10 or $20 a month by calling 818-985-5735, option 2, or donating online at kpfk.org/donate.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. You're listening to Radical Free Speech Radio, KPFK in Los Angeles.
An international human rights group on Wednesday accused the paramilitary group fighting against Sudan's military of committing war crimes during its attack earlier this year on the country's largest displacement camp in the Darfur region. The Rapid Support Forces, which is at war with the Sudanese military, rampaged through the Zamzam camp in April as part of its siege of the city of El Fasher, the provincial capital of North Darfur province. The RSF seized the military's last stronghold in Darfur in an October attack that was marked by the executions of civilians, rapes and sexual assaults, and other atrocities against the area's non-Arab population. Amnesty International said in a report that the RSF's multi-day attack on Zamzam involved killings of civilians, hostage taking, and the destruction of places of worship, schools, and health clinics, and that they must be investigated as war crimes. Amnesty also criticized the United Arab Emirates, as it has done in the past, over what it says is the Gulf nation's support for the RSF. The UAE denies involvement. The RSF grew out of the Janjaweed militias, who became notorious for atrocities in the early 2000s in a ruthless campaign against people identifying as East or Central African in Darfur. That campaign killed some 300,000 people and drove 2.7 million people from their homes. Russian President Vladimir Putin says some proposals in a U.S. plan to end the war in Ukraine are unacceptable to the Kremlin. That suggests the deal is still some way off, despite intense diplomacy by American envoys. More from Karen Chamas.
In remarks to an Indian broadcaster before arriving there for a state visit, Putin described recent talks with US envoys as necessary but difficult. Russian spokesperson Dmitry Peskov asserted that Putin did not reject the proposal but accepted some elements and not others. He called it a normal working process, a search for compromise. However, Putin's comments indicate that a deal is still some way off, despite intense diplomacy by American envoys. Peace efforts face tough demands, especially regarding Ukraine's territorial concessions and future security. Meanwhile, European leaders accuse Putin of feigning interest in peace efforts. Russian attacks on Ukrainian cities continue and have caused casualties and damage. I'm Karen Chemas.
French President Emmanuel Macron has warned that the U.S. could be about to betray Ukraine. That's according to a leaked transcript of a phone call between European leaders. Russ Cullen has more from Paris.
As Ukrainian representatives meet American officials once again for peace talks, the concern for Ukraine that there is at the highest level of European leadership has emerged. The details of a phone call that took place on Monday between leaders including French President Emmanuel Macron and the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky were published by the German magazine Der Spiegel. According to the publication, Emmanuel Macron said, quote, "There is a possibility that the US will betray Ukraine on the issue of territory without clarity on security guarantees." Macron apparently added that there was a great danger for President Zelensky. Ross Cullen, Paris.
Meanwhile, French President Macron pledged deeper cooperation with China to address global issues like the war in Ukraine and trade. Macron met with China's Xi Jinping during a state visit today, focused on trade and diplomacy. Macron is seeking to involve Beijing in pressuring Russia toward a ceasefire with Ukraine. Xi announced China will provide $100 million to aid Palestinian territories in the humanitarian crisis there, but did not explicitly confirm whether China would help pressure Russia towards signing a peace agreement. Both sides agreed to work towards greater economic cooperation in areas like aerospace and green industries. They signed 12 agreements, including cooperation on panda conservation and exchanges in higher education and research. The UK and Norway have agreed to a defense partnership that will see both countries' navies cooperate in patrolling the North Atlantic to protect undersea infrastructure and track Russian submarines. Stuart Smith has more from London.
Members of the NATO military alliance and share responsibility for patrolling what's called the Greenland-Iceland-UK gap, a vast area of ocean that Russia would need to pass through to reach the Atlantic from its northern naval bases. The two navies will deploy the same type of British-made warship, which will specialise in anti-submarine technology. Stuart Smith, London.
Farm workers and advocates are speaking out against wage cuts for agricultural workers, both foreign-born workers in the H-2A visa program and U.S. citizens who work alongside them. The United Farm Workers and California Attorney General Rob Bonta submitted separate public comments this week condemning the changes. More from Suzanne Potter.
Diego Iniguez Lopez with the United Farm Workers Foundation says U.S. workers will be paid $3.52 less per hour, and guest workers' pay will drop by $6.52 an hour.
This is going to make farm workers who ensure that we have food on our tables unable to afford food themselves. It's horrendous, it's callous, it's arbitrary and capricious. We'll deepen poverty within farm worker communities.
The new rule, published by the U.S. Department of Labor, admits this change will transfer almost $2.5 billion a year from farm workers to employers. The rule also allows companies to charge for housing that they previously had to provide for free. The Trump administration has said it wants to speed up H-2A visa approvals and lower costs for companies that own farms. Iniguez Lopez predicts the government's position will backfire.
It argues that this rule is needed in order to prevent a labor shortage, despite the fact that the Department of Labor acknowledged that basic economic theory holds that if there's a labor shortage, the thing to do is to raise wages, not decrease them.
The United Farm Workers filed suit to reverse this rule about 2 weeks ago, and the Trump administration has until mid-January to respond. The union won a similar lawsuit during the first Trump administration that sought to freeze farm workers' wages. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A new report from KFF Health says California is facing an acute nurse shortage due to a variety of factors. More from Mark Richardson.
California is seeing a staffing crisis in nursing that is upending workplaces and threatening patient care and safety. Nurses say their workloads have grown out of control, according to KFF Health News, and they're facing immense pressure to discharge patients and turn beds, especially in financially struggling hospitals. Catherine Phillips with the nonprofit California Healthcare Foundation says the situation is getting worse.
In 2025, statewide, we now have a 5.2% shortage. We're about 19,000, almost 20,000 nurses short of what we need to meet our population demand in the state of California.
Phillips says regional shortages, particularly in the Central Valley and rural north, are expected to grow. Researchers predict that unless lawmakers in the healthcare industry take dramatic step, the shortfall could more than triple by 2033. Studies show the gap between the supply of nurses and the demand is complicated by inadequate career paths and high turnover in a labor-intensive industry. Nurses and their unions also claim the problem is driven primarily by what they see as a management-induced staffing crisis and poor working conditions. Phillips says patients are caught in the middle.
It's a vicious cycle, and it affects everyone in the healthcare system. We've seen hospitals close. That means there's fewer employment opportunities for nurses, so it's harder to recruit them into those regions. And those who are left have to do more with less.
Phillips says new legislation is aimed at strengthening staffing laws and supporting nurses, but challenges remain in the areas of cost of living, education, and retention. In addition, Medicaid cuts and new eligibility rules caused 3.4 million Californians to lose their health insurance coverage, risking $30 billion in annual funding and further straining the healthcare system. This story was produced with original reporting from Angela Hart for KFF Health News. For California News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
Ohio's Cuyahoga Valley National Park and the United Kingdom's Dartmoor National Park became sister parks last year to collaborate on environmental awareness and conservation. The five-year partnership marks the first time the U.S. National Park Service has partnered with a British national park. Farah Siddiqui has more.
Leaders say the collaboration supports conservation, education, and community engagement at a time of rising environmental pressures. The five-year partnership became official in 2024 after more than 3 years of planning. Peter Harper served on the Dartmoor National Park Authority until this year and says the visit to Ohio showed what cross-continental collaboration can make possible.
I went out for the signing of the agreement and we were actually blown away by the amount of work and things that have been done to actually restore nature within the Cuyahoga National Park. We came away feeling things can actually be done differently.
According to Dartmoor officials, national park funding in the UK has dropped by 50% in real terms since 2010-2011, contributing to staffing shortages and new challenges from hotter, drier summers, increased wildfire risk, and heavier winter rainfall. Much of the partnership centers on environmental education and expanding public access to nature. At Cuyahoga Valley, the Conservancy's Environmental Education Center hosts thousands of students each year, blending science, outdoor learning, and civic engagement. Educators say the goal is to help young people build confidence and see themselves as stewards of the land. January Miller with the Conservancy says the work includes ensuring students from all backgrounds can participate fully.
What we strive really hard to do is to make sure that every person who comes out to the park finds their access point. Even if a kid doesn't see themselves as a scientist, there is an access point for them because this is their national park.
Leaders from both programs say the partnership will expand virtual classrooms, exchange programs, and shared conservation strategies. Cuyahoga Valley officials also plan to integrate more historical storytelling, including newly uncovered stories of African-American recreation in the valley. as they restore landscapes and prepare the park for future generations. For Ohio News Connection, I'm Farah Siddiqui.
A coalition of children and families advocacy groups have launched the Choose Children campaign. It's an effort to center pro-child policies in the 2028 campaign for California governor. Suzanne Potter has more.
The campaign asks candidates to support programs to help expecting parents, strengthen health care for young children, make early learning and child care affordable, and fairly compensate early childhood providers. Avo Makdessian is executive director of the First Five Association of California.
California needs a governor who will address the chronic underinvestment that has held young children back for so long. We need a governor who will ensure children get the care they need, who's going to support parents and educators who keep our youngest Californians safe, healthy, and learning.
Makdessian notes that one in five California children lives in poverty. Child care costs on average more than $21,000 a year, and 60% of babies in the Golden State don't get all of their recommended well-child visits to screen for developmental delays and behavioral health challenges. That number goes up to 75% for African American babies, and he says nearly one in five of our early educators earns less than a living wage. Myra Alvarez with the Children's Partnership says the next governor will need to be relentless in bringing down costs for California families.
Parents are grappling with one fundamental urgent challenge: affordability. Affordable housing, affordable health care, affordable child care. These issues shape every decision a parent makes at home.
Advocates praise progress made under the Newsom administration to expand paid family leave, promote transitional kindergarten, and invest in early childhood mental health supports. But they say more remains to be done. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
More than 1,000 West Contra Costa teachers went on strike today over pay and benefits, staffing, and better support for students. They say years of understaffing and unfilled vacancies have left classrooms struggling, and teachers insist that only meaningful negotiations will resolve the crisis. KPFA's Annetta Felix has more from Richmond.
Where does all the money go? Hey, ho, ho!
The strike began Thursday in Richmond, where educators gathered on the picket lines to demand better pay, full staffing, and stronger support for students. Parents and community members joined them, showing solidarity as classes remained empty. I spoke with Christina Baronian, Political Action Committee Chair of United Teachers of Richmond, about why teachers are striking and what they hope to achieve.
I'm here today because I am trying to secure a better future for my students. Our schools are struggling, and the district is refusing to provide fair compensation to the educators, which in turn is causing staffing shortages. Teachers are leaving for higher paying districts, and we're not able to attract new teachers. And then it affects classes like mine, where two grade levels are being combined, which is not only extremely difficult, it's morally unfair to my students. They're not getting what they need. And it's because the district refuses to invest in the students.
Baronian described the negotiation process that led to the strike.
We've literally gone through every possible step of negotiating with them. We gave many proposals to the district. They either didn't respond or just refused.
Teachers say their demands include a 5-year percent raise this year and next, fully funded health care, and adequate staffing for special ed programs. So far, the district has offered a 2% raise and limited healthcare improvements. Belinda Roddy, an English teacher and department chair at a local high school, explained how staffing shortages affect both students and teachers.
You need to pay teachers a competitive, adequate wage. You need to give them proper benefits. You need to give them support in special education and international education. Right now, teachers do not feel supported, and students are not getting supports that they need right now. What they have right now is long-term subs, massive vacancies, and a lack of supports. And that's not good enough.
According to a press statement signed by Cheryl Cotton, superintendent of the West Contra Costa Unified School District, the strike harms kids by disrupting their learning. A parent, Theresa Gonzalez, responds to this.
In the long run, it'll help. They can be out of their password just for these few days.
so that these teachers can get what they need and, you know, get them competitive with the wages and benefits of the other people.
Union leaders and parents insist on skipping classes till they come to an agreement. Meanwhile, the superintendent says schools would remain open and meals would continue to be served for students who attend. I'm Annette Felix in Richmond, reporting for KPFA Radio.
A California animal rights activist convicted of felony conspiracy after taking four chickens from a Purdue Farms owned poultry plant in Sonoma County was sentenced this week. Zoe Rosenberg is a UC Berkeley student. She was also found guilty of trespassing and faced up to 4.5 years in county jail. She spoke to supporters outside the courthouse before the hearing.
The Sonoma County District Attorney's Office says that I am a threat to public safety. They say that I put humans and animals at risk when I enter factory farms and slaughterhouses. And they are going to stand up in court and they are going to say that today. They are going to say that I apparently caused the slaughterhouse to delay their production, somehow costing Purdue over $100,000 in losses by rescuing four sick, abused birds from their slaughterhouse.
Judge Kenneth Noss sentenced Rosenberg to 90 days in county jail, with 60 days eligible for jail alternative programs such as electronic monitoring, followed by felony probation. A Sonoma County jury convicted her in November of felony conspiracy and three misdemeanors connected to the June 2023 break-in at Petaluma Poultry. It's a USDA-regulated facility operated by Purdue Farms. She was convicted of conspiracy with other members of the group Direct Action Everywhere to unlawfully enter the facility, remove live chickens, steal business records, and interfere with commercial operations. The district attorney issued a statement saying Rosenberg and the group showed, quote, a remarkable lack of credibility, and argued that breaking into a heavily regulated biosecure food processing facility is dangerous and illegal. Strong beliefs, she said, do not place anyone above the law. Supporters, meanwhile, say the jail sentence could be life-threatening due to Rosenberg's severe health issues. The four chickens she removed were reportedly valued at just $24. Rosenberg addressed the court at sentencing and did not express remorse for taking the chickens. Instead, she said, quote, I'm filled with remorse for every animal I fail to save.
While these animals continue to suffer.
Actor Joaquin Phoenix has publicly supported Rosenberg, pointing to reported violations of California's animal cruelty laws at Petaluma Poultry Farms, including birds reportedly found collapsed on the floor or stuck on their backs without access to food or water. Rosenberg and supporters allege that Sonoma County and the city of Petaluma have repeatedly declined to prosecute animal cruelty violations at the facility. Rosenberg received one day of credit toward her sentence for the nearly 2 years she wore an ankle monitor during pretrial release. Her attorneys filed a notice of appeal. The rescued chickens are alive and living at a farm animal sanctuary. Northern California residents received an earthquake alert early this morning, warning them to brace for a magnitude 5.9 earthquake near Carson City, Nevada. But no shaking ever came. The United States Geological Survey canceled the alert within minutes after seismologists reviewing incoming data and determined that it was a false alarm. Officials say the alert was triggered by an erroneous automated estimate generated by the shake alert system, and the case cause is now under investigation. Lori Dingler is Emeritus Professor of Geology at Cal Poly Humboldt. She said the Shake Alert and MyShake app rely on automated estimates of earthquake size, location, and expected shaking after three or more seismic stations detect vibrations.
Thought it detected an earthquake. It sent out a message to people that they thought would feel that earthquake. and nothing happened. Right now, we don't know for sure exactly what caused that glitch. The USGS folks are working on that. They're the two most common causes of a mistaken identity earthquake. One, some kind of noise. Basically, the shake alert system works by three or more stations detecting a seismic signal a few seconds apart and thinking that that's an earthquake. And so based on the time that it arrives at those seismic stations, it will figure out, okay, it was located here, and we think it had a magnitude of such. So today, thought it was a 5.9.
Dingler added that while there was no danger this morning, the glitch is a reminder that earthquake preparedness remains essential.
What we know, good thing, no earthquake. Second good thing, I hope it made you think about earthquakes. And when you get an alert, I mean, get into a safe place. If you're in bed, stay in bed. If you're young and able, get under a desk or table. If you're my age, stay still where you are, cover your head and neck, and wait. And if nothing happens in 20, 30 seconds, then there's not going to be strong shaking. So it's no big deal. Hopefully they learn from whatever happened today and the system gets improved.
As of news time, the USGS says it's still examining what caused today's false alert. California has launched a new online portal for reporting alleged misconduct by federal agents operating in the state. Governor Gavin Newsom and Attorney General Rob Bonta say the system allows Californians to submit videos, photos, and written complaints involving ICE, Border Patrol, or federalized National Guard personnel. Governor Newsom said the state, quote, won't stand by while anyone, including federal agents, abuses their authority, unquote. He called the portal a safe way for residents to share what they witness and help hold officials accountable. Attorney General Bonta said federal agents have the authority to enforce federal law, including immigration law, but most still act lawfully and in compliance with the U.S. Constitution. He encouraged Californians who believe an agent is acting unlawfully to report it through the Attorney General's website. Details have emerged about the victims of the shooting at a toddler's birthday party in Stockton over the weekend that left four people dead and at least 11 injured. The dead included children aged 8, 9, 14, and 20, and a 21-year-old man who were shot at a banquet hall in the Central Valley city where they'd gathered with at least 100 other people to celebrate a 2-year-old's birthday. Family members of Maya Lupien, 8, Amari Peterson, 14, and Susano Archuleta, 21, have confirmed their loved ones were killed in the shooting. Police are continuing to search for suspects and have said that it may have been a targeted incident. Detectives believe multiple shooters may have been involved and are working on suspect descriptions. And a reminder to our KPFK Los Angeles area listeners, KPFK is currently in its winter fund drive, and we are calling on you to make a contribution at the level that you're most comfortable with at kpfk.org. You can also call 1-800-439-5732. I'm sorry, that's the KPFA Berkeley number. The LA number is 818-985-5735, extension 2. Again, you can call KPFK to make a contribution at whatever level you can afford at 818-985-5735, extension 2, or online securely at kpfk.org. Please, won't you consider supporting independent free speech news, news that's fact-based, news that's important in these perilous times. Partly cloudy tonight in the San Francisco Bay Area, lows in the 40s. Tomorrow, clear, highs in the 50s. Then the Central Valley, clear tonight, lows in the 40s. Clear tomorrow, highs in the 50s. In the Los Angeles area, clear tonight, lows in the 40s. Tomorrow, clear, highs in the 60s. That's it for the news tonight. EA is at the controls. Good evening.
As a KPFK listener, you expect to hear smart conversations about important issues every time you turn on the radio. We bring you facts and analysis, not partisanship or hype, so you can form your own opinions on the news. You count on KPFK for informed, insightful reporting. Don't take coverage like this for granted. It's here for you, thanks to the generous financial support of our listeners. Support the programming you rely on right now by calling 818-985-5735 or contribute online at kpfk.org.
Support comes from CAP UCLA presenting Seth Parker Woods, Julia Bullock, and Connor Hanick on January 15th at the Nimoy. The powerhouse musicians unite for an evening that